Crypto Parabellum Podcast, episode number 15. I'm hoping that one of these episodes, I'll be able to say, Crypto Parabellum Podcast, the final word on Sam Bankman-Fried, and we'll never speak of him ever fucking again. But I don't think that time's coming anytime soon because, well, dude loves doing interviews, Alan.
Yeah, he's definitely going on a bit of a tour the last week, and I think that will probably continue. I don't think we'll be done talking about this for years. I know neither you or I were around in crypto for Mt. Gox, but I would imagine it still gets talked about today.
Not all the time.
But it gets picked up.
Enough that I know about it, yeah. And I shouldn't. Like, I know granular details when I've never really tried to.
and so this will be the same. We'll be talking about this 8 years from now. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, you're probably right. So we wanted to jump on here. Obviously, Joel isn't with us this week. He'll be back next week. But Sam has done a litany of interviews. He did a phone interview, which I listened to. And then obviously he did the Aaron Ross Sorkin interview yesterday. Aaron Ross Sorkin from CNBC, but also the co-creator of Billions, the show, which is a good show. At least it was first couple seasons and then kind of deteriorated. But he's a popular guy and gets a lot of these big interviews. I don't even remember what the event was that he agreed.
It's called Deal Book.
Okay, what's that?
Now you just put me on the spot. But
No,
I don't know. I believe Deal Book is something like a speaker series that he put on. I think he's like the creator of it. I don't think
that Aaron Ross Sorkin did. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's some deal that he has with the New York Times.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. So yeah, he had this series and it sounds like there was a bunch of interviews yesterday and obviously Sam was one of them. So I just got done watching it at 1.5x speed. And I said to you before we came on here, like, you're going to have to drive this because all I did was get angry while I was listening to it because there's a lot of things we're going to go through line by line and hopefully I'll mark these as chapters so people can just kind of go to like, well, what did he say about this? And they can just click to it. We can read it. And then people can kind of go through and get our opinions on it. But I don't think like from all the things that he's tweeted, said, interviewed, put in print, put in media, whatever it may be, like apparently his idea is let me show everybody how incompetent I was as an executive and that'll make everything better. This is just gross incompetence. So it's very clear to me from a legal perspective, he is trying to create the defense of gross incompetence versus fraud and crime. And quite frankly, he's got two parents who are legal professors and he's doing a good job because quite frankly, I have never heard of anyone that was as big of a fucking moron as Sam Bankman-Fried was in running his company. So I'm going to set it up that way as what I have taken out of everything he said. And now maybe he's smart in so much as he's making himself just sound like the dumbest person on earth. So maybe that's just a big game and I'm falling for it. But really, I would not be the person who'd run out there and be like, hey, you guys want to know what a dipshit I am? Here, let me tell you. And that's what he's doing right now. So anyway, Alan, what did you think?
How am I supposed to follow that up? I will take a softer approach. As someone that is deeply involved in running a crypto business that is not nearly as successful or large or serious as...
Whoa. Who's more successful now?
Well, yeah, now. Was.
Okay, know, there you go.
FTX
there
was. Go. It's hard. And so I, maybe to a fault, have a soft spot for operators. Maybe specifically in this space because I know how difficult it can be. And I think it's easy to Monday morning quarterback and say he had no idea what he was doing. Maybe you're right. But I don't believe that he had no idea what he was doing. I believe that in hindsight, it's easy to pick out a few areas of failure and say, how could you not focus on that? I get it. Like he made mistakes. I'm not playing defense. I'm just saying that I don't think he's a complete idiot, is my opinion. I don't think FTX gets to the size that it is by being a complete idiot. I think you can make big mistakes without being a complete idiot in general. Okay. But anyways, what I did was and shout out to my wife on this one because I watched the interview live. It was at 5 p.m. So my wife is very pregnant right now. She's going to be having a baby anytime. And she spent a lot of time making dinner. And I come downstairs and I'm like, hey, I have to watch this interview. So we sit down to make this to eat this dinner that my wife made. And I put my laptop on the island and we watched together. So thank you. Shout out to my wife for putting up with weird crypto stuff 24/7. But and I took notes throughout the whole thing of the points that I thought were either new, interesting, or not common knowledge. Pieces of information that we got here that maybe we didn't get from other places, Twitter, okay, cool, other interviews. So I'll start with one of the first question. I'm going to be looking over to the side here to my notes pretty often. Andrew starts the very first question. He talks about the fact that he received tons of letters, emails, etc., from presumably clients of FTX's leading up to this interview. And he reads one of them. And basically, this person describes that they lost their life savings on FTX. They don't say whether that was FTX International or FTX US, but they say it was $2 million. And their question was, Sam, why did you commit fraud? And why did you loan your hedge fund $10 billion? And so Andrew poses the question this way to Sam, just the way that it's written. And Sam says, well, there are two situations, and I don't know which situation you're in. There's FTX US and there's FTX International. Sam responds that he believes that FTX US is fully backed, and there's no reason why those depositors couldn't be made whole right now. And he doesn't understand why it was locked. And I thought that that was an interesting point, because if you remember, as we're going through the drama, FTX International did pause withdrawals. FTX US did not for some period of time. They eventually did. But there was some period of time where they did not. And so I think it's my opinion that he's right here. I think that FTX US is fully backed. And those depositors, if they are treated separately, will receive their money back. Now, I'm not an expert in bankruptcy law. I'm not really an expert in any law, much less bankruptcy law. But I don't know whether the creditors, in this case, US and international, get lumped together. I don't know. If that happens, then there will be a bad outcome, undeniably, for the US customer. So that's where he starts it off. Then Andrew asks about the commingling of funds. So in that letter that I started with, or Andrew started with, the user copy and pasted the terms of service, whereas, and I won't quote it specifically, but there's terms of service that say your funds will not be, are not owned by, are not lent to FTX Trading Digital or whatever the entity was. And so his question is like, how did you lose customer funds if in our terms of service, it says that you can't? And Sam answered this the exact way that I would have, and I've actually been wondering why he hasn't answered it this way in the past. And what he says is, so yes, it does say that in the user terms. In other places of the user terms and other places of the platform, users have the ability to opt into a lending program. Jared, you might be familiar with what this looks like. On the platform, you could take your asset and you would see an hourly rate that the platform was paying. And they show that in an annual APY format for sort of easy use. But the term loan was always an hour. You could take it out and an hour later, you would get your money back. And so Sam said, yes, it does say that we won't do that in the terms of service. But if you as a user opt into that lending, that borrow lending aspect of the platform, you're now lending your funds. So I'm curious on your opinion. I think I have some, but I'm curious on your opinion to that answer.
So there's a couple of things that off both of the first two questions, let me give you my cynical as hell. I believe people are innately scumbags, and I believe that people will do what they need to do to enrich themselves and set themselves up the best way possible. Answer. Okay. The first thing you said was, Sam came in to say, I believe FTX US customers are whole. Okay. That's all there. So if you have political buddies, if you are a US citizen and you don't really have fear for criminal prosecution inside the U.S., what I would make sure is, look, I did everything I said I was going to do to protect U.S. customer funds. I cannot help, because even goes on later, I'm sure you're going to get there. If you circumvented the KYC rules to go to FTX.com and you're a U.S. citizen, you weren't supposed to. That wasn't me. So that is all there. It was all one-to-one. We were following regulation. When I sat down with Gary Gensler, I did everything I said I was going to do, and it's all ready to go. So there's one. Okay. The second part was that really nice insulation of, well, yes, it did say that, but it also said this. It reminds me of an episode or a series of episodes from another Aaron Sorkin, not Aaron Ross Sorkin, but Aaron Sorkin in The West Wire. In The West Wing. In The West Wing, there is a whole story arc about how Jed Bartlett had multiple sclerosis and didn't disclose it. Okay. And they're talking to like the White House counsel, and you're going to go, why are you even talking about this, Jared? Well, it's because there's an episode in there where they talk about how, man, I tell you what, it looks like the president set up everything that you would do if you were trying to perpetrate a fraud and get away with it. And so when I hear Sam say, well, yeah, but I insulated the U.S. customers, F everybody else. Well, yes, there was the we will not lend your funds, but we did have this over here, which you may or may not have understood. And if you ever checked into it once, it was there. It sounds to me like he did everything he possibly could do to give himself a legal out to be like, whoa, 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 you did your own thing. So when I hear those things, yes, I didn't know that was possible, but literally I was like, boy, this dude is not dumb. I say he's dumb. I say he's a trash CEO, which he obviously was. But like the the thing that every time he answers and the way he answers, and I was like, this dude was literally putting in building blocks to protect himself the whole way. And I'm going to push back to you because I know you're going to drive the majority of this episode. But like even the way they communicate internally, these conversations were all set to erase. Okay. So there are no internal communications. They were all deleted. The guy literally set up step after step and contingency after contingency to make sure he had the, oh, well, fuck Aaron. I don't know. Defense, so, and he's done it beautifully.
So if you want to take that side, I actually think there's a better defense that doesn't involve any speculation. So okay. Just to that one point where his answer is the reason we lost funds is because users were participating in this borrow. That is voluntary. You didn't have to do that. But whether you did that or whether you didn't do that, the outcome's the same for all users right now.
Right.
So if you wanted to argue that, I just don't think that the user terms is a good argument because some users did opt into lending, some did not. They're both in the same scenario right now. But
do you know if you were auto enrolled or did you?
No, you were not auto enrolled. You were auto not in. You were what's
right? You had to opt in.
You had to opt in. Yes.
Okay.
But so I almost think it's a moot point because I almost asked this on Twitter, but I didn't think I'd get a good answer, so I deleted it. What amount of funds were in the lending pool? I don't know. I don't think anybody could know right now unless you had like screenshots right before it happened, but I don't think it matters. It wasn't everybody. And so I don't think this point matters, but I do think his answer is relevant and realistic and true in this case. Some users opted in to lending their money. That comes with risk. So anyways, that's my only opinion on that.
So real quick follow up and then we can go on. And I'm not trying to belabor this as a point. Do you think that's a setup to say, well, look, it's not that they couldn't have been lent against. We just thought there were firewalls in place and there were safe. There was the reason why there was the ability to take loans is because this program existed. We just didn't audit how much was being loaned appropriately.
No, like that's not the issue. The issue is the collateral to the loans went bad.
Okay.
So the loans in theory were fine. They had collateral. They just had bad collateral.
Yeah.
And so like, that's the issue. It's not that they loaned, I guess you could argue they loaned too much because they treated the collateral as more valuable than it was.
Yeah. And they, all right. So I'll let you keep going. 'Cause he brings that up. Keep going.
Yeah. So I just noted to myself here that after he asks the question about commingling of funds and Sam gives the answer that someone could have opted into the borrow lend, it's clear to me that at this point, Andrew Ross Sorkin, which by the way, side note, I don't trust anybody with a hyphenated last name, Sam Bankman-Fried, Andrew Ross Sorkin. I think if you have a hyphenated last name, I generally don't trust you. Anyways.
Hot take.
Yeah, sorry.
So there's somebody listening who has a hyphenated last name who just got like absolutely sideswiped by Alan. Anyway, keep going.
I stand by it. I stand by that statement.
That's fair.
So I just noted to myself that clearly Andrew doesn't know the FTX platform very well, because the natural next question in my mind is saying, okay, hey, some users opted into lending. What was the total amount that people opted into? Was it this $8 billion hole that you have? If the answer is yes, okay, cool. And if not, why? Because that would have dug a layer deeper on that. Yeah. And then I think it would have potentially exposed fraud, or it would have exposed more gross mismanagement. But because he didn't know enough, moved on to the next question. Yeah.
Quite frankly, I'll give you the same answer right now, because I just watched this interview. Well, Aaron, you know, obviously this all falls on me and I should have known better. And like, there were some failings here that I should have done, and I don't really know. And I don't have those details in front of me because I'm not part of the process anymore. But, you know, that's something I should have had my head on. Anyway, what's your next question? That's exactly what he would have said. The guy's been doing it the entire time. Anyway, keep going.
So the next question, I'm just looking here. Andrew asks about Caroline's public comment. They used client funds to cover the loans of Alameda that were called from other platforms. She claimed that she was aware of this, Gary was aware of this, and Sam was aware of this. So you may be asking yourself, when did Caroline say that? This was an internal conversation where Caroline was talking on a video conference to either Alameda employees or FTX employees. I'm not sure of the details there. And Sam says that, to the best of his knowledge, the borrow desks closed down earlier this year. That's true. We know that Genesis took losses to Three Arrows Capital. BlockFi took losses. Celsius took losses. The majority of crypto lending desks closed down. And so what he says here is that when that happened, Alameda transferred all of their borrowing that they used to do on other desks. They transferred that inside to FTX. FTX became the biggest lending desk, basically. And so that's what he thinks that she means in this case. I'm not going to argue whether that's accurate or inaccurate, but that's his answer. Andrew moves on to ask about the connections between Alameda and FTX. He says, hey, you've given interviews to Bloomberg, is the one that he cites. You claimed that you weren't really involved in Alameda anymore, but didn't you guys like live together in this penthouse? This has like been talked about pretty extensively. And I thought the interesting part here is Sam said, I did live with Alameda, one or two of Alameda employees. One of them we know is Caroline. I would be interested to know who the other was. He said, yes, like we did live together. But an important part that was new is said, I don't live there anymore. And then he said, I'm not there right now. And so he said three different things. He said, we live together. Okay, got it. I don't live there anymore, but then immediately said, I'm not there right now. And this stuck out to me because BitBoy, who you may be familiar with, was in the Bahamas this last week, went to the penthouse, stood underneath the penthouse and sort of yelled up at the windows. And he found what appeared to be SBF's car. And we know this because SBF's car, which was a Toyota Camry, older Toyota Camry.
Corolla.
Oh, Corolla. Excuse me. Yes, you're right. Sorry. Toyota Corolla was featured in previous videos. There was a laptop, a box of a laptop sitting in the car, a canister, what do you call that? A prescription pill bottle with some white pills cut in half, which people believed to be some type of like, what's the word for it? Stimulant? Yeah. And so that's why you'd cut those in half, because you're doing smaller doses. So it's weird that he said, I don't live there anymore, because his car was there a couple days ago at minimum. And BitBoy also mentioned that he saw curtains moving around when he was yelling up. And then he immediately corrected himself and said, I'm not there now. So I thought he maybe got caught in a little bit of something right there.
Yeah, maybe.
So then Andrew asks about the wires to Alameda. He says, hey, people were wiring money to Alameda to get credited on FTX. Why was this? I thought Sam's answer here was potentially plausible. So he says that, he says that, well, when Alameda existed before FTX, Alameda had plenty of bank accounts. When FTX was created, we had a hard time getting bank accounts. I can understand that. It is hard for crypto companies, especially exchanges abroad, to get good banking access. And so he said, when we didn't have bank accounts and customers were asking us to be able to wire funds in, we're like, hey, why don't we just use the Alameda accounts? As soon as money hits the Alameda accounts, we'll move it into the FTX accounts. We'll credit the accounts. we shouldn't have been doing that for very long. We did it sort of as like a stopgap. It sort of wasn't a problem. We stopped paying attention to it. We forgot about it. I think that's a plausible answer.
I thought so too, because it allows you to ramp up your business while you're trying to get the bank accounts set up, right? So it'd be like, hey, wire into Alameda, we'll credit it back. If you want a request, come to us, we'll wire you back out through Alameda. Like, that's not unreasonable to me. What I found interesting about that answer, though, was he said, Andrew Ross Sorkin said, so you were able to circumvent KYC.
Yeah, he misunderstood.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And Sam quickly followed up and said, no, you still had to follow the same KYC procedures to get to your account on FTX if you do that. I'm curious if they had 100%, if they didn't, like, yeah, you can get in. Like, that, like, I don't know if that information will ever come out or not, because you'd see, like, all right, well, we'll just credit your account. Like, we know who you are, and, like, blah, blah, blah.
I mean,
I'd be curious if they did that.
There was no, I not that I'm aware of. So there was a time when you could have an FTX international account with no KYC. And I believe you had some sort of withdrawal restrictions.
It was like 8,000 a day, then it became 2,000 a day.
Yep,
and then
but those are crypto withdrawals. Anything that had to do with a bank or wire required KYC always I can remember. And especially in the last 2 years or whatever, whenever they cracked down on KYC.
Sure.
So
sure.
I don't think that the wires to Alameda is actually as scandalous as people think. I think
fair enough.
I think
it's plausible. I mean, look, of all the sins that were committed,
I don't think that's a serious one.
I don't think that's a big one. I do think it allowed, like, what I think happened there, and we're gonna get into this, is Sam even alludes at the end of the interview. He was like, you know, I was focused on growing the business and not as focused on compliance as I initially had been. And so while it's plausible they did what they did, I think everybody would look at it and go, hey man, like, you can't do that anymore. Like, you got to stop. It's one of those things that is forgivable. It's a bad business practice as you're getting started. But then once you become established, which I think we would all agree, FTX was fairly well established.
That's right.
You stop doing that, right? Like, you stop allowing that. So my point here is, from a compliancy perspective, those rails of credit and debit back and forth were never severed, and they should have been. Yep. And that's with them just being lazy. I'm not saying criminally lazy, but I think it was. And it just, again, it's a, like, well, let's just leave them there because it gives us this back door, which is what everybody's referring to, because there's a way to cross credit. And now they have a plausible reason to say, well, it's from before. We never really meant to do it. There was just debits and credits back and forth. And me, Sam, as CEO, I should have known that I'm as bad as it was.
I'm less skeptical about that piece. So the backdoor, I think, is actually something different. I think and we can talk about that.
He said it isn't. He said it isn't. Like, he explicitly said, not in this interview, but in the phone when he did 2 days ago, that was not a thing. I don't even know how to code, which is always hear from the dude that's leader in the space.
So not to go too off topic, but if, you know, anyone, I'm sure a lot of people missed that. It didn't, that specific phone interview, it didn't get that much traction. It didn't get that much sort of play. But in that interview, I believe that he skirted that question by the way that it was worded. So that journalist, I don't remember her name. I'm sorry. She's not really a journalist, actually.
It sounded like she wasn't a journalist. So yeah,
she's not a journalist. She asked the question incorrectly. And she said, like, hey, I read something that you coded this back door. And that gave him an opening to say, I don't know how to code. I didn't code that back door. That's not the assertion that she should have made. The assertion that she should have made was that Gary coded a backdoor at your request, then he would have had a harder time skirting that question.
Okay,
so I don't think that this Alameda wire issue is the same backdoor. No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think it's easy. Like, they set something up years ago that works. They moved on to other things. They stopped focusing on something that worked. They're like, hey, we don't need to pay attention to that. It works. I'm going to go focus on something that's broken.
Okay. Fair enough.
So Andrew then later asks, if they say, he said, hey, Sam, you're in the Bahamas. Are you allowed to come to the United States? And Sam says, to my knowledge, I am. And Andrew asks, have you thought about coming to the United States? And Sam says, I have thought about that. He says, my understanding is that there's probably going to be some hearings that I will be requested to be at. I will need to and will be in the U.S. for those. So normal. I didn't take anything away from that. It's just, this is the first time anyone that I can remember, asked him, are you allowed to be in the U.S.?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too. Again, I think that with his law professor parents, he has gone through whether or not he has a case to duck criminal charges. And I feel like he feels very confident that he can. And to me, it's kind of a smug, like, yeah, no, we're good. I'll be there. You know, like one of those, like, I'm not worried about that part.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't get any smugness out of this interview, whether it was an act or not. If let's assume for a moment that it was an act. Yeah. He did a great job. Let's assume for a second moment that it wasn't an act. I think he's saying the right things. I hate to take that sort of side.
No, yeah.
It's not going to win me any friends, but it's just my opinion.
I'm not going to say that I wouldn't, if I was at the helm of a massive failure in fraud, I'm not going to say that I wouldn't say these things. Because I would. Because I'd be trying to duck jail time and trying to do everything I can. You know, like, at the end of the day, you're you and you got to protect you. Everybody looks out for number one. By the way, I had I have a stream that a lot of you guys probably don't know about, but I have a stream where I talk about TA. And like in March of this year, I need to go find the clip. March of this year, somebody that watches my show brought it out and sent it to me and was like, hey, do you know March of this year? Do you remember when you were talking about Elon and Sam? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you said something like Sam and Elon both strike me as the kind of person who are just like abject pure utilitarians, where it's like the ends justify the means no matter whoever gets hurt. And like, I wanted to build this thing and I don't really care what corners I have to cut, because like he even said it in the interview, ultimately my thing is doing this and that's what I care about most. And he even said it in this interview and I'm like, God, he is the pure utilitarian. He is, in my opinion, the type of attitude that Sam possesses and continues to convey is the exact type of the exact way that Nazism became a thing, right? Like, well, if we just kill all the people we don't like, then eventually we'll all be great together. So like, if I can rob some people, eventually the utopia will be amazing. So who cares who gets hurt along the way? I believe, and he's even kind of alluded to that himself, that he's like, yeah, I'm pure utilitarian. That's what I care about most. Ends justify the means.
Okay. I am not aware of any time where he alluded to being that or saying.
Oh yeah.
When?
I'll find it. Not long ago.
In that interview? I'll find
it. Not okay, the interview. Ones from the past 2 days, but okay. Within the past couple of weeks.
So I've only become, I don't even remember what the word is anymore, something, what is the description of it?
It's just like pure utilitarianism. So like,
what's the title that you gave him a second ago? Pure what?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think I was just saying like he's just like the.
But no, you just use
pure essence of utilitarianism. Yeah, okay.
But it's some psychology sort of archetype, something like that.
No. Yes. Yeah, the archetypical utilitarian is what I said essentially.
Yeah. So that I've never heard that before, and I couldn't even spit it out just now. But that was covered by Nick Carter. I don't know if you know who Nick Carter is. He has a crypto podcast called On the Brink with Castle Island. He was a psychology major. I believe he has his master's in psychology now in crypto. And he agrees with you. He thinks that Sam also aligns with that. Okay. Andrew then asks, I'm just looking here. Okay. After withdrawals were halted, Andrew talks about like the hack is basically how it was referred to. There was money that left the system after withdrawals were frozen. Tell me about that. And Sam basically says that my access at that point or previous to that point was cut off. So I don't have full visibility into being able to answer this, but I can tell you what I think. And so in this point, I believe that that's accurate because there's a Twitter sort of timestamp on all of that, that after bankruptcy was filed, what's the new guy's name? Whoever the new CEO is, announced that Sam has no longer has access. And then this started happening. So it's not Sam saying, Sam's not the only one saying that he didn't have access. This guy who doesn't like Sam, he's the new CEO of FTX US, the Enron guy, John Ray, whatever, is basically saying Sam didn't have access. So I think he's telling the truth so far here. He says, I didn't have full access, but here's the way I understood it. New information that I did not hear anywhere else. He said that he believes the U.S. team gained access and took custody of some of the assets. That's very interesting, if true, because I haven't heard that talked about anywhere. I haven't seen that speculated anywhere. my understanding is the only person from FTX US that was sort of like the last man standing, his name is Ryan Miller. He was the general counsel for FTX US. It would be interesting to me if that was Ryan Miller, because I know Ryan Miller casually, not a friend of mine, but I know him. I've been in two situations with him where I feel like I've some ability to judge his character. Yeah, and he operates on the up and up, is my personal opinion. And so interesting if that did happen and the US team did take custody of some assets. He also then said Bahamian regulators took access and it took some of those assets. And then there's a third party, which he believes was like a hack, actually.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I do. Because obviously, we all know how easy it is to like move funds if you have access to seed phrases and other things. So he would be somebody who would have been in a position to do that. The other ones being Caroline and Gary. And so that's pretty fun. Oh no, there was some spyware, some malware that somebody got access to. They just waited until this crucial moment in the history of FTX to actually execute this hack. Okay. Then the actual piece of, Bahamas, like, I'm sorry if I continue to be this cynical, and I know you're gonna be like, man, you're just painting everything in a negative light. Like, to recap here, we talked about how he is illustrating the point that we did everything possible to protect U.S. people via FTX U.S. and they should have been made whole. We were following the guidelines that were put forth for us. And then, oh, by the way, the other place where I am right now, the Bahamas, is the other place that we made sure we're not pissed at us and we're complying with them to make sure the best outcome for me to continue unmolested has been satisfied. So like, yes, but the Bahamian whomever said, you better get this stuff off. Okay, we did. We complied. And then the US is good. And oh, by somebody hacked this stuff. So like, it's just very convenient to me that the place where he's a citizen, I assume he's still a US citizen, you know, and then also where he lives are the two areas are like, no, with the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. All the rest of you guys are screwed, but like, we got these ones.
Fair point. So the issue that I had with this answer is he's been asked this question twice and he's given what appeared to me to be two different answers. One was this one. So I'll cover this one first, like we just did. He said, the regulators in the Bahamas came to me and said, we are taking this from you. And that was the answer that he gave to Andrew, a bit more of like a heady type answer, like a proper regulatory answer. The regulators came to me, he used an acronym that I can't recall. It's a J something, but basically what it sounded like was when they filed for bankruptcy, a regulator in the Bahamas said, we basically now have visibility into any money movements that you do. Yeah. And that was his answer to Andrew.
I got it right here. Under the supervision of a JPL system in the Bahamas with oversight from the Securities Commission of the Bahamas and, you know, board, to my knowledge, taking actions to protect FTX's clients on any customers there.
So that was his answer to Andrew. His answer to the phone call non-journalist lady that we talked about earlier was different. His answer to her didn't talk about this. I forgot already. The JPL. JPL. What is that? Do you know?
No idea. Okay. I'll figure it out.
A JPL system. He didn't mention that at all. He basically said, we didn't want, and I'm paraphrasing, we didn't want a bunch of angry locals showing up at our doors.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I said that. I said that in a tweet. I said, like, my guess, what was probably 2 weeks ago, I tweeted that my guess was the reason why they allowed withdrawals locally was they didn't want a mob outside their door. And so that's what he said to the citizen journalist, I'll call her. And he answered the question differently to Andrew. So I thought that was something to be skeptical about.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, a very, very good way, to cover your butt, man. Like, you know, I mean, think about it. If there's a handful of rich and motivated people in the Bahamas who just got ripped off by a dude, and you know where he lives. I mean, that's a serious threat to him. So, you know, you're taken care of, you know.
Yeah. So we'll eventually know. I mean, I think that will be public whether the Bahamas regulator did that or not. I think we'll know. So Andrew moves on. The next part that I thought was worth newsworthy or worth talking about was Andrew asked about the real estate that was in his parents' names. And this was very, very strange. I here's what I assumed before any answer. I assumed, like, here's the non conspiracy thought. Okay. I have parents. You have parents. If I become incredibly successful, I'm worth $20 billion. It wouldn't be that crazy if I buy my parents a house. Rappers do it all the time, right? Like, what's the difference?
Okay. Yeah,
so, so that's kind of what I figured. And he probably bought his parents a house. Now, the way he answered this question was very strange to me. I think he could have easily said, yeah, I bought my parents a house. Like, they are selling that house now because that money is going to go back to the company. But yeah, I bought my parents a house, and he could have said that. But what he said was he had a really hard time answering this question. He sort of fumbled around a bit. And what he said basically was, and I'm paraphrasing, he wasn't exactly sure why it was structured the way that it was, meaning he wasn't sure why his parents were the signers on it. It was intended to be company property or a home that was bought by the company. This is not the only home that was bought by the company. There were plenty. And he addressed this earlier. Why were you guys buying all this real estate? And I think it's actually a plausible answer. He's like, look, we were trying to attract the best talent in the world, and we were asking them to come move to the Bahamas to work at FTX. We were giving them $200 a day in DoorDash credits. We were giving them homes, luxury homes, apartments, condos to live in.
For sure.
That's not that crazy, I don't think.
Not at all.
And so I think he could have just said, yeah, I bought my parents a house, and they're in the process of dissolving that, and that money will return to, you know, the bankruptcy court on behalf of FTX. But yeah, I just wanted to buy my parents a house. But it got very weird.
So this is why this is funny to me, because like I just like the biggest eye rolls of all time, man. I'm going to read exactly. This is the transcript on CoinDesk, which I will include in the show notes. But there's also reports that your parents signed and were effectively provided with what seemed like a vacation home. Okay. You have parents. I have parents. If you're alive, you have parents. Whether or not you have a relationship with them. Yeah. Here's what he says. So I don't know the details of the house for my parents.
There's more to the answer, but yes.
No, I get that. Okay. I get that. Okay. Alan, if you ran a $20 billion company or you were worth that and you were going to buy them a home or use their name, in which required their signatures as they are law professors at Stanford, would you have a casual relationship about that transaction to where you go, quote, so I don't know the details of the house for my parents?
No. No, I would not. And in addition to that, I mean, I have to jump through compliance hoops for way less, not a $17 right. million dollar home. And I'm not the CEO in this case. And you know, the company would never buy my parents anything, but very strange. That part was maybe the most strange answer.
But I knew that it was not intended to be their long-term property. So I don't know the details, but I know it was not intended to be their long-term property. Now, is it plausible that they were having issues getting loans to buy a massive property that they needed a co-signer on because that? Yes, it is. But that's not what he said.
Yeah, that's what's weird to me. Just say, yeah, I bought my parents a house and they're going to sell
Or quite frankly, let's say he's being honest. He said after that it was, I know it was intended to be the company's property. Okay. Earlier, he alluded how it was difficult for the FTX to get bank accounts. Okay. How about you say, you know, it's difficult to get loans to buy homes here when we're trying to set up housing for our employees and we were having some issues getting around something we needed to do to close this transaction. I asked my parents, who are law professors, if they'd be willing to lend their name to this to allow like a creditor backing to this. And they agreed to, so we could expedite the process to get more homes for our employees to live in that we were bringing down. That's a completely plausible and reasonable thing to say. Yep. Instead, he said, so I don't know the details of the house for my parents.
Can you read his whole answer? Because I think from memory, he struggled through it. So I want to see if that actually comes through in the text or not.
Yeah. So he said, I don't know, but I knew it was not intended to be their long-term property. I know it was intended to be the company's property. I don't know how that was prepared in. And I think that was where it was was it will end up? Okay. That's him struggling.
Yeah.
I think they may have stayed there while working with the company sometime over the last year. Okay. So he's unsure if his parents ever stayed in the property, which
you would know.
When you look at the when you look at the rest of it, there were a lot of properties purchased in the Bahamas. You know, the reason for that is we had, you know, 100, you know, basically 100 Silicon Valley, you know, like literally this is, that's when he goes into talking about we're trying to incentivize them.
Reasonable.
Blah, 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 blah.
Reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. Reasonable. But again, like that's why I would listen to this and I'm like, you are playing the role of the dumbest executive in the history of time. Not even just like, is that one of those things where like, hey, I made some bad decisions? Sure. But would you know the details around asking your up to this moment very well-respected law professors to sign their names on the dotted line for a property for you? You don't know the details of that?
Yeah. I agree with you on this one.
What else don't you know, sir?
Yeah, no, I agree with you on this one. This one's very strange. Very strange.
Anyway, sorry. This is why I got angry and I was literally like, I have to listen to this because I'm going to talk about it. But like, it disgusts me when I listen to stuff.
One of the next questions that Andrew asks Sam about is the illegal drug use. And actually I'd love if I wish I had the transcripts in front of me, I would have just copy and pasted them, but can you read Andrew's question? Because he formulated it in a pretty generous way, I thought.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, exactly where that is. So when you're talking about it, here we go. Can I ask about the drugs? You have tweeted about it. Caroline has tweeted, others have tweeted about uppers and downers and all sorts of things. There have been pictures taken of something called the MSAM, which apparently increases levels of dopamine to the brain to treat Parkinson's. Were you taking that patch? Sam says, so it's funny. I had my first sip of alcohol, relevant, after my 21st birthday, and I have maybe half a glass of alcohol a year, roughly speaking. Just like I'm a vegan, but I eat shrimp. There were no wild parties here. When we had parties, we played board games. And, you know, 20% of people would have 3/4 of a beer. So he knows that 20% of people would have 3/4 of a beer. But, you know, I don't really know the details around my parents' home in the Bahamas. Dude, come on. You can't be that specific and expect me to be like, oh, yeah, but that whole $17 million property, not sure. But I do know that 20% of people have 3/4 of a beer.
He's trying to paint a picture of, like, we weren't having crazy parties. Like, and that's the picture that he's trying to paint. And
I'm sorry. I'm going to take that chasm to drive through how insane it is. Let me finish, then you can go on your deal. I didn't see any illegal drug use around me here at the office at these parties. And when I say parties, blah, 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 having people over for dinner is what I mean. And then this is the point that gives him an out because, look, I've been prescribed Adderall in my life. I've been ADHD since I was 12, man. He said, and look, I can't talk about anyone else like what they're prescribed between themselves and their doctors or psychiatrists, which I'm pretty sure in the Bahamas, you can go to a store and pick up a lot of these things. But regardless, I can say for me,
or not.
I don't know. I've been prescribed various things at various times to help with focus and concentration. And I think they have done that.
Right at the end, I don't know if it didn't come through in the CoinDesk comms or whatever, but he said something kind of funny, I thought. He's like, I wish I was a lot more focused.
Sorry. So anyway, I think these have all just been totally on-label use of medications. And I think that these have, on the margin, helped me focus a little bit. I wish I had been a lot more focused over the last year.
Like that part's kind of funny.
Good.
I mean, the situation's funny, but that part's funny. So I thought that was an interesting answer that he gave. Pretty, what would you call that? Like a political answer. Like, hey, I don't know. I can't speak to other people's prescriptions or non-prescriptions. Like that's not really any of my business. Easy cop out. And then says like, yeah, I have a prescription and I use the prescription. It's easy.
Quite frankly, like they weren't talking about like, you know, freebasing cocaine. They were talking about uppers and downers, dude. You know what? You drink caffeine, you're taking an upper. Like I have no real issue with that. Like I have much greater issue with the incompetence than I do with the drugs.
Fair enough.
Obviously.
So Andrew asked a question about the lack of board oversight. He's like, hey, FTX had no board oversight. And so the way that Sam answered this, I don't know whether this is true or not, but I found it interesting because he said, honestly, I felt like we had too many boards and then the feed cut off. He disconnected.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back on. He said, sorry, I disconnected. He said, we had too many boards. He said, we had all these different, I'll call them shell companies, but I don't mean it in a negative way. We had FTX Japan. We had the Bahamas entity. We had the US entity. We had maybe the international entity. Yeah. And they all had boards. He's like, I actually think that was a mistake because by having so many boards, each one didn't feel acute responsibility. They felt responsibility for a small part of the whole. and they're like, oh, you know, my part doesn't matter. And if everybody thinks my part doesn't matter, then no one's actually really paying attention. Yeah. And I thought that this maybe is a credible answer, because the accusation that at least I've been seeing on Twitter and everywhere else is like, there was no board, there was no oversight. I don't know. Maybe that is true, but I thought his answer was news to me, and that there were a lot of boards, and he actually thought that it was a bad thing because then no one felt responsible.
Well, like, quite frankly, I'll put this out here right now. If you're listening to this and you know someone who is on one of these boards of one of these international versions of FTX, we would love to talk to them and hear what those responsibilities were. Because as far as I know, no one's ever been like, yeah, I was on the board of FTX Australia, and this is what we talked about. And so I understand what you're saying, and I don't even necessarily disagree with it. Like, you have too many cooks in the kitchen, and like, oh, somebody else will do it or whatever. Yeah. And like, that happens all the time, man. Like, that happened to me in my professional life where it was like, ah, hell, someone else will do it. You know, like, you hear, and then shit falls through the cracks. I'm sure you have it at Path where you guys are growing like crazy, and like, you're the ops guy. So I'm sure that you have to see everything, but you can't do everything. I'm sure Alan will handle it. Okay. Well, maybe not. All right. And that's hard to do. So I completely understand that. However, let's be real for a moment. He's saying maybe we had too many boards. Okay. Presumably he was a part either actually on or something on each one of them. Let's say they didn't exist. Let's say there was just one board that handled everything.
Okay.
And they had to get like a person from each region to be on the main board. And that way everybody was having, which quite frankly is what it should have been. But so now we're talking about somebody like Sam being the chief executive and chairman for a bunch of boards. And the guy is clearly incompetent as an executive, not incompetent as a human. I don't want to make them like, I've made this assertion several times that he's dumb, that he's stupid, whatever. And he is not like, I'm not saying like you tested his IQ, he's stupid. He's just clearly unfit to lead anything. Okay. So it rolls up to Sam now. Sam's the one who made these mistakes to begin with, bro. You built the structure. Like, well, maybe we should have had less. You designed it. Like, whose fault is that? It's yours. It's you being a clown show that allowed all of this to happen to begin with. We should have had less boards. Okay, fine, dude. But you didn't show the ability to manage any piece of your business well. And I will point you to their internal financials. The main mothership, they couldn't locate bank accounts. They didn't know where money was being held. Alan, do you know where money is held for your company?
Yes.
Okay. I thought so, man. We're talking about a company that is hundreds of times larger than yours, or was, not anymore. You guys are whooping their ass now. But like, and they didn't know where the bank accounts were. What are we talking about here?
I don't know. I'm conflicted because my feeling is that their setup was so complicated. Maybe intentionally, maybe by design, maybe nefariously. Okay. Let's assume for a moment that it wasn't, that it's actually just hard to do all of these things as a crypto company, because you want to skirt that law. You want to play on this gray line. You want to operate here, but you don't really want to alert the attention of somebody there. Like, all of those things, reasonable. Binance does them. Binance just does them better than FTX right now.
No doubt.
So I think it's just hard for me to play Monday morning quarterback and say, you're an idiot. You fucked up. You weren't paying attention. Now, what I will say is that, actually, a question to you, Binance. Yeah. Do you know, in terms of business size, so maybe volume is the best way to think about it previously, how much bigger Binance is or was than FTX was?
A lot.
Like, multiple?
If I had to guess, it's like 10.
Okay. So then it would be reasonable for Binance to have 10 times as many employees as FTX, maybe. But the thing was, FTX ran so lean. They had maybe 300 employees total. And I think that this ended up being a big problem for them. And what Sam should have done was just be the face. There was a time where he had to be the Hackett guy. He had to go solve a problem in whatever way possible. And what that ended up was jerry-rigging things. A bank account here, a bank account there. Oh, whatever. Connect them. It works. Oh, thank God. Let's move on to the next problem.
Yes.
I can relate to that. Dude, they were in hypergrowth for 3 years. They were just trying to stay afloat. And what should have happened, Binance has over 7,000 employees. 7,000.
So if we, my 10x is right, which I don't know it is, it'd be 25x, right? 25 times more employees than FTX.
I think that's part of it. Dude, one person cannot do all of this. One person cannot know everything, see everything. I don't care who it is. Go to Elon. He doesn't know what's going on in the minute details of OpenAI and Tesla. And like, you're just one person. And so what I think, I mean, Sam admitted it 100 times yesterday, was like, at the end of the day, the buck stops with me. And that's the CEO response. You have to have that response. But he needed to put people in place that were operationally experienced. It would have slowed him down, and that's why he didn't, is my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And there's one piece that I want to pull up here that I want to talk about that we skipped over here. But while we're doing that, you're right. He should have hired more. He should have hired more people to help him run this. I imagine there was probably part of a embarrassment, like, hey, we're this, you know, 10-figure company more, and we keep our books on an Excel spreadsheet that isn't even well done, and we don't actually know where the bank accounts are. So, like, you don't want to bring people into that. But, like, the other part of it, man, is they went out of their way to keep that circle really, really small. They went out of their way to keep it small. They used dissolving communications where things automatically deleted, so there was no paper trail. So tell me the business reason for that. Okay.
For what?
For what?
I can answer.
What's the business reason after you're an established company? When you have a competitive advantage and you're growing, I kind of get it. But when you're a multi-billion dollar company, what is the point of having no paper trail?
Specifically with chat messages?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like that's what they did, their payroll through chat messages that were deleted. Okay.
Not payroll, so like, but expense proofs. Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Sorry. Yeah. But still, why would you do that?
I believe that the reason that they did that was to avoid a paper trail, just like you're saying. However, what I would say is it's all speculation of whether that was done because they were doing something illegal and didn't want to get caught and covering up their tracks, or you know, you're on the gray line. You know that crypto's hard, man. It's hard. They're running an exchange that probably shouldn't exist. So like, if everybody in crypto wants a product like that, you have to understand every exchange that you're interacting with that is like FTX, it's a gray line. And they didn't want a technicality to be the thing that they tripped over. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario was it was a Ponzi scheme, a fraud, blah, blah, blah. And I get that. It's easy to go to that.
Yes.
But I'm saying don't take the easy way out. Think about it intellectually and say, like, no, there is another side where this is somewhere in the middle.
And you know what, Alan? I have no problem admitting, given as cynical as I've been throughout this entire episode, I have no problem admitting that does fall somewhere in the middle, okay? But it looks to me like someone who has grown up under the thumb of two legal professors saying, let's talk about plausible deniability, man. Every decision they made was set up with the I'm not sure defense, and he's going to get away. I initially thought this dude would do time, like real time. Now I don't think he is. I really don't, because you would not be this fucking stupid to give these interviews if you did not feel tremendous about what happened next. And that kind of goes into my last thing, and I think you got to go. But I want to, okay. The question that Andrew asked about his future was the most arrogant, infuriating thing he said of the entire interview. Blah, 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 Neuronoptis, we talked about that. What do you think realistically is your future? Sam, what is my future? I don't know what my future is. And you know, when you fast forward, I have no idea what I'm going to be doing. Blah, 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 blah. But I want to be helpful wherever I can to regulators, administrators, and you know, I don't know where that will lead, but I know that I can say prior to filing, there had been a lot of interest in financing, a lot of fairly strong interest, you know, many billions of dollars worth. I can't make any promises about anything, but I would have thought that there would be a chance for a pathway forward here that would bring more value to customers than what would happen if you just sort of sold everything else for scraps. And I don't have confidence, but I can't promise you, and I can't promise anyone anything, and there's not really anything in my hands, but it would make sense to be exploring that because I think there's a chance that customers can end up a lot more whole. I don't know, maybe even fully whole. So this dude thinks that his future is a slight shade different than what he has been doing. That's how confident he is. He's going to get away with very little civil or criminal penalty.
I read that differently. So the way that I read that answer is what I think he was saying. The first part where he said, I don't know what my future is. I want to be helpful to regulators. I read that as talking about this FTX bankruptcy situation, meaning if the company wants me to come in and help them decipher why this money's there, what happened, then I'm happy to do that. The second part of what you said was like the billions of dollars and I feel like customers could be whole, et cetera, et cetera. The way that I read that was pertaining to his answer in previous interviews where he said, filing bankruptcy was my biggest mistake in all of this. And yeah. He alleges that 8 minutes, I think he says, after I filed for bankruptcy.
8 minutes.
Yeah. I had billions of dollars of investor interest. I don't know whether that's true or not. I mean, but if you have money on FTX, you wish that was true. You hope that was true. I don't know whether it is or not, but that's the way I think he's answering the question. I don't know what else you say there. What does he say that makes you happy? Oh, I'll probably be in jail. Like, does that make you happy?
I would like to see some contrition and some acknowledgement of the fact that he will never be a main player in this space ever again, because he shouldn't. And like, how do you not know that? How do you not know that? Like, you literally just lost billions of dollars because of your incompetence. And you think that you're just going to roll the red carpet out. People are going to be like, yo, let's go again. And I remember like Mr. What's-His-Nuts was like, yeah, I'd invest in Sam again. He just made some mistakes. He won't make them again. Like, what?
All right, so we
absolutely ridiculous.
We had this conversation at the office. So I'll ask you the same question. Jared, Sam DMs you, okay?
Yeah.
And he says, Jared, JMP plus EV. I really value your content. I think you're a smart guy. I have a new venture that I'm going to be starting. Look, FTX sucked. It was great, and then I made some really bad decisions. I learned a ton. I'm going to take those learnings. I'm going to take sort of my previously known expertise in crypto, and I'm going to start XYZ. I would love for you to be a part of that. I'm offering you seed round. Fully diluted valuation is $10 million, right? This is ground floor. This is an idea, but I'm going to build it. You're telling me you pass on that?
Okay, so this is a multifaceted answer, okay? One, I happen to be in a situation where I don't need the money, okay? So like I feel like I'm well financially, or I don't feel like I need to get in on everything, and I can be more discerning to my morals. Whereas if I were lesser, I would be like, ah, 10 million, you can turn that into 100 million. I still 10
million. No, he's not asking you for 10 million. I'm saying,
I get that. What I'm saying is the valuation is 10 million for him to get from 10 to 100 is easy. That's a 10X of however much money I'm putting in. Okay. So like, yes, pragmatically that would make sense to do, but let me tell you something. It is the best piece of advice I've ever been given in my career. Okay. It actually happened at the company where Joel and I met. I won't talk about it, but my boss back then was a man by the name of Otis Lockett. Okay. He's a retired Air Force captain. He was the hardest fucking dude I've ever met in my life. And I was very empathetic to people that performed poorly and did suspect things at the time that we were working together. And so I would go into his office. I was a mid-level manager at the time and he was my director. And I would go in and I would say, yes, but I think blank person has this. And I think blank person has that. And he goes, Jared, I'm going to help you out for the rest of your life right now. You don't always know who people are when you work with them. You got to feel them out. You got to see how they operate. You got to see what they do. And you have to form an opinion. But sometimes people will show you who they are. And the best advice that I can give you for the rest of your career is when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Sam just showed that he's a piece of shit executive, that he doesn't know how to run an organization, that he was at best a talking mouth with political ties that used that to leverage himself into a situation to get vastly rich, which he then screwed up, and not only screwed up to the tune of massive harm across people around the world. Sam Bankman-Fried showed me who he is, and he is incompetent to run an organization. So no, Sam Bankman-Fried showed me who he is, and he's a crook. I would absolutely not do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, here's the thing.
I think it's a bad decision.
If I was trying to make... I hear you. I mean, you know what, though, Alan? So let me ask you this. Apples to apples, you have two competing offers. One Sam, one somebody else for the exact same seed round. Are you choosing Sam over anybody else?
Hard to answer that because my answer would be it depends who the other person is.
Someone who isn't a fraud.
No, I don't think I am. And here's why. Perfect example. Do you know the name Adam Neumann?
I do, but
yeah, it's the WeWork founder.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So WeWork, similar type of situation. Huge, fast growing business. Fall from grace CEO. A lot of people called him a fraud, called the company this and that. They're now, they're an operating business. They have tons of clients. I don't think they make money. They have revenue, but they don't, they're not profitable. Adam Neumann failed at WeWork. I think we can agree about that. He's getting a second chance. So, and a massive second chance. They raised a really big round from investors who invested in him the first time. Businesses fail more often than not. Now, I do not take this out of context. I'm not playing Sam defense. I'm just saying that I have a hard time swallowing, as someone that's also in this space, that will likely make mistakes at some point. I can always guarantee that I will not be committing fraud or egregiously allegedly stealing money, but people make mistakes. And so I have a hard time accepting the fact that someone should never get another chance again. After prison, after like what? He works at Walmart for the rest of his life giving out cards?
No. You and I both, though, there are plenty of ways in which he'll be able to make a living the rest of his life. No problem. Just because he knows the systems well enough to do well. Like, that's it. Just based on what he knows about order books, he could trade or invest or do things and make money, and he's fine. So, yes, I guess I don't disagree with you. The WeWork thing, I actually never watched, the documentary, and I know that, they blew up magnificently.
Yeah.
They missed what they were going to do.
They lost investors' money, not retail's money. That's the difference.
Correct. A failed venture to me is actually something that should be looked upon favorably if you did it the way in which you said you were going to try to do and it didn't work out. You learn valuable lessons. You will get better. That is, we're talking about an attempt that failed versus gross incompetence, possibly criminally. Those are two different things, man. And so if you were like, yeah, Jared, I'm going to throw in $100,000. Like, all right, sweet. And then 12 months later, you're like, yo, it's gone. I'd be like,
but I'm saying that's the bet is you have a maximum loss of 100%. And that's as bad as it can get.
So from a plus EV perspective, which is my name on Twitter, it makes total sense. What I'm saying is that morally, here's the thing, dude. What if you had a chance to throw in with Hitler when he founded Volkswagen? You're like, I don't know, man, this dude's got something going on with the Aryan race. Let me throw in 25 G's into Volkswagen because it could be good one day. I don't care that he's killing all the Jews. Are you willing to do that because it's a pretty good return? That's what we're talking about here.
I guess I somehow see Hitler and Sam differently. So I don't know. Crucify me for that, I guess.
No, but what I'm saying is it's a shade of gray. And I would have to be in pretty dire circumstances to run full steam into a room to be like, yes, this is the dude I want to align with. And while I'm probably in the minority of that, and I could probably ask people in my chat room that's got 800 people, I'll ask the same question via a poll. Let's see what they say. I'm guessing most people would say yes, because it's probably easy money. What I'm saying for me as someone who doesn't need that money, I'd rather say no and try to watch that dude die than ever give him a chance to succeed again, given what I know he's done and how he set himself up to escape it. It's unbelievable.
I mean, fair enough.
He probably will.
Yeah. So last question for you. You mentioned earlier that you originally thought Sam would see jail time, I think is the way that you phrased it. Yeah. And now you're not so sure. Where would you put the odds?
I think there's a 10% chance he sees inside of a cell.
10%?
Because I think with every answer he gives and every interview he does, I'm like, this motherfucker has had the best legal consultation ever. And he's getting things on the record that all he has to do is defend his interviews. And that's a much easier to do than to answer questions live. And he's going to have every answer sussed out with, I don't know, oh, shucks. And he's going to do a really good job. And quite frankly, he paid the right people. Like, let's be real, man. Look at people who are mid-class, middle class or upper middle class and above who get DUIs for the first time in this country, dude. They have no issues. This shit's off the record in no time. If you're poor and you can't afford a good attorney, you go to jail. You get a suspended license. Like, it's just how the legal system works. So, yeah, this dude is literally paying the right people. He did the right things. He has the, oh, shucks, I should have known better defense, which I think is all garbage, but he did it brilliantly, so good for him.
Okay. To that point, one of the last questions, and we can wrap up on this one, that Andrew asked was, how much money do you have left? And Sam said about 100K. What, do you believe that?
No, not at all. Not even for a moment do I believe that. Not to mention, he insulated himself in a lot of his investments from FTX. Like, Robinhood is not a part of that.
That's not true. Robinhood?
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not true. Robinhood was pledged as collateral in the BlockFi deal. So if, and BlockFi is suing Sam personally because the bank that is custodying the Robinhood shares is not giving them up to BlockFi, and they're holding those Robinhood shares, I think presumably, I don't think this is like proven, but I think for the FTX bankruptcy or Chapter 11 process. So okay. I don't believe that to be true.
So let's say that's not true and maybe that's wrong. Fine. You think that dude, given what we know about how crypto works, you think that dude hasn't put away millions of dollars somewhere that nobody knows about?
They don't
even have accounting.
I tend to agree with you. I tend to agree with you. You're not that... He's good at crypto. Can we both agree with that?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Okay. You don't have 100K.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here, man. I have a credit card that still works, and I have 100 grand in my bank account. Yeah, bullshit. And, like, how much did you give to your parents in back alley channels or friends or people to hold on to? You got a burn bag somewhere? Like, no way, dude. He's going to be fine.
Yeah, I just don't see any scenario where he's only got 100K, and he doesn't have any crypto anywhere.
Yeah, it's garbage. I mean, whatever. We'll see what happens. It's going to be like, I really, really badly want to stop talking about this, and I know we'll never get to. And that sucks because I feel like every time I talk about him, like, I'm doing him a favor that he doesn't deserve. But it is what it is. Like, we have to, because it's part of our industry and that's his podcast. But like, there, so much of what I am about and in crypto for at my core, he allegedly espoused to people anyway, and then he did the exact opposite for personal gain in the face of effective altruism. And that is literally, I cannot hate him anymore. And I didn't even lose any money in this. I didn't lose any money. Imagine if I did.
Yeah, I think
unbelievable.
I think that has been a stark contrast where you see like some of the feedback that he gets after these interviews from prominent people, Kevin O'Leary, Bill Ackman. Kevin O'Leary did lose money in this. Bill Ackman, as far as I know, did not. Sort of like saying like, yeah, you got to give the kid another chance. Like, he messed up. And I think that a lot of people who didn't lose money, and this may be part of my problem, is I didn't lose money on FTX either. Plus, I have sympathy, whether warranted or unwarranted, for the operator aspect of like, this is just hard. He's the same age that I am, right? And like, I think he's smarter than I am. Maybe true, maybe not. But so like, you know, I guess if Sam can mess up, so can anyone, is sort of the way that I feel about it, right or wrong. And but then there's a whole nother crowd that lost money on there. And I would probably be in this camp too, of just like, I don't even want to see him again. I get that. That's totally fair. So I said it was the last question, but I have one more.
Yeah, go.
Do you think that him doing these interviews are positive for him or negative for him?
Well, I kind of just set that up by saying that I think that when he does get called to Congress, all he's going to have to do is defend his interviews, which he can rigorously prepare for and then be ready to defend. So I think it is definitely done strategically. Whether or not I think it's good or bad, you know, I think that I guess you give him credit for not hiding in a closet somewhere. So I guess that's positive, but at the same time, man, like, you know, I don't care how many old ladies he crosses the street who need it. Like, he lost $10 billion. So fuck him.
It's not the first person to lose $10 million.
Billion. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that they are positive for him. But my caveat is all of the interviews that he has done thus far that I'm aware of, at least, correct me if I'm wrong, have been non-crypto native people. And I think that might be intentional because they are less likely to know the right questions to ask or when to say, wait, that answer doesn't make sense. And I know that doesn't make sense because I have this experience and now I'm going to double down on that question. He hasn't done that yet. And maybe that's because all of the people that know what questions to ask, he doesn't want to talk to, or they're too small. And he's like, it's not worth my time. I'll go talk to the New York Times. I'll go talk to Andrew Sorkin, whatever. But there is one coming up as far as I'm aware with The Block. And that is Frank something. I forget. Yeah. I'm a little bit wary because whether Frank like wants to paint it this way or not, they were close. I saw plenty of pictures of them together at dinner and they're flirting across tweets. And so like that part's interesting. Although there's a guy, I'm blanking on his last name, Canadian guy on Twitter, Adam something, so ends with a C. He responded to that and said, let me be the co-host because I know what questions to ask. I think Frank probably knows what questions to ask as well. And I'll give Frank the benefit of the doubt. And like, let's just wait and see whether he ends up being a good journalist or whether he's too buddy-buddy. I don't know. You would imagine he lost a lot of money on FTX too and probably has a bone to pick. But I withhold my answer of whether these interviews are a good idea or not until he does one with a crypto native person who knows what questions to ask, because I think that will be the true test.
I think that's pretty reasonable. You know, I guess I have so much vitriol, it's hard for me to see that clearly. And like I think that I see just a massive void between a venture that failed and what he did. Okay. Because like I have been a C-level executive before. Okay. I have ran an apartment at a budget and I did it for a small company and we were my LLC is more sophisticated than FTX was. Okay. That to me says that there's like, it's not he tried and failed. It's that he did it so spectacularly that I can't imagine there being another side to this, but I'll be damned if he doesn't try. And like, I think we're seeing very clearly that Sam loves him. Some Sam, dude. Like Sam is really into Sam. Okay. Like he loves giving interviews. He loves talking about stuff. And quite frankly, what annoyed me the most about the Andrew Sorkin interview was like, he was smiling, man, when they introduced him, like, shut up, you know, like, stop it. You should look like you just ended thousands of people's lives because you did.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people will be on your side. I honestly, it's the easier, it might be the right path, but I do think that it's the easier path because my opinion is that every scandal, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And so I don't think that it's full fraud, full Ponzi, I think it's in the middle, man.
Let's be honest. They would never have invested in Path if they were. Okay. They never would have invested in Path because there's very little they can do with that investment they have right now. Okay. Like, clearly he changed to where he wanted liquidity as investments very quickly. So like, I don't think that's who he was through and through, but I think that you can see a very clear pattern to me of someone who was protecting his girlfriend that saw it going down the drain, that tried to pull at every stop that he could to keep it going. And then when it didn't work is now retreating under the, I guess I should have paid attention more. And like that annoys me.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think you have every right to feel that way and you might be right. I think most people will agree with you.
Yeah. Well, again, we'll see what happens. I don't really know. But like, yeah, I can say pretty confidently that I guess to your question about would I invest, my answer would be no. It's easy to say that right now. But at the same time, if I were a big enough person for Sam to ring my doorbell, somebody else would too. And I'd much rather give them my money. Anyway, this has been fun, man. Episode 15, a lot of hot takes here. I imagine this is going to get a decent response in view, mainly because I just kept on losing my mind and I can't help it.
I think I'll get it worse than you do. No one wants to be the Sam defender. Like I said, it's easier to not be. And so I think I expect more heat than I think you'll get.
Hey, you know, we'll see. Only time will tell. I'll play us out here in the episode 15. Crypto Parabellum podcast. Find out next week. We'll be episode 16. Talk about the backlash. When's the block interview?
I don't know. I don't think it's been announced to date.
When we find it, we'll let you guys know. Otherwise, thank you for tuning in. Crypto Parabellum podcast, episode number 15. Take care.